When I was a kid, I had recurring failure dreams. If I were playing baseball, for example, I could smack the ball deep into the outfield, but I wouldn't be able to round the bases. Or I'd be chopping wood, but just as the axe met its target, the blade would turn sideways. Prepping for Let's Make Love, my failure dreams revolved around the telephone. The calls were always important, but the phone would ring and ring because I could only hear it faintly, like it was off in the distance. By the time I got to it, the caller hung up. I heard the phone ring again this morning, and as always, it was 1,000 miles away. But the sound grew, and soon the phone was only 100 miles away, then 100 feet, then it was up on my nightstand, where it had been all along. The early morning caller was Mike, my fearless and relentless leader.
Good morning, Bruce. It's Mike. I assume you're already up?
Yeah, of course.
Listen, I'm in the middle of a production meeting, so I can't talk long. We're adding a car chase at the end of scene 72, and we're just about to pick a car, but it just occurred to me that Foyle is the one who chooses the car for Harry.
Well, you want me to choose the car for the chase?
No. I want your character to choose the car. We're playing for keeps here, Bruce. Work with us.
Yeah, sure, Mike, but how do you want me to go about it?
Quickly. I'm sending you to Dallas. Ever been there?
Yeah, once. Why there?
It's home of the single largest car dealership in the nation. If you can't find Harry's car there, you can't find it. June, my secretary, you remember her. She'll meet you at the dealership, take notes, arrange payment, etc., etc.
Okay, yeah, sure. When?
Today. People will call you about that. Have fun. Get busy.
But Mike was done. Oh. There were several things I noticed while shooting a film in Dallas a few years ago. First, the place was flat. Architects love it because there are no mountains, rivers, or oceans to distract from their designs. That's why, architecturally speaking, you see so many weird buildings spread willy-nilly across the city. Secondly, the world's largest car dealership made sense in Dallas because you've got oil-drilling fat cats still living off money they made 2 decades ago, and your general assortment of fortune seekers in a regulation-be-damned town. I met June in the football field-sized, fry-and-egg-hot parking lot of Midlife Motors. I can't use their real name for legal reasons, so let's just stick with that. Wasn't hard to spot the sales manager, Duff Jenkins Jr. His hair was perfect, his mustache was perfect, and his I-ain't-got-a-care-in-the-world smile was perfect. On this bright day, Duff wore a white cowboy hat that was impossible to view directly without protective eyewear. His suit was a hybrid of sorts, shit-kicker meets city slicker. A silver sharkskin jacket and pants, a sky blue shirt with a string tie, an oversized longhorn buckle attached to a belt that was cinched tight around his expanding shot-in-a-beer belly. Duff was the number one car salesman in Dallas 5 years running. His hand was extended easily a dozen feet before we actually shook.
Mr. Campbell.
Bruce will do just fine.
Duff Jenkins, Jr. Nice to meet you, sir. I sure love Cisco Kid.
Briscoe. Duff, this is June. She works with the director.
Missy?
June will be fine.
Sure, okay. Now, you're doing some research for a film or whatnot?
Yeah, I need to pick a car for an upper-middle-class, recently divorced man who wants to redefine himself.
Got just the thing.
We walked to the import section, where a canary-yellow Subaru Baja sparkled in the sun. Duff went right into his thing.
Subaru Baja Sport Turbocharged 16-valve single overhead camshaft all-wheel drive.
Okay, so Duff, what does this car say about the guy who buys it?
Well, it depends. How old is he?
I wasn't sure, and I glanced at June.
50-ish.
Duff sucked air through his teeth like he just saw a dog get hit by a car.
Yeah. In that case, it says I'm 50, trying to be 18 again.
Not quite right. He's having a midlife crisis, but he's not that desperate.
Let me tell you a secret. Thank God for men like him, because he keeps men like me in business. I just did a sales conference in St. Louis, and the keynote address was about the economics of a midlife crisis.
Duff walked us over to a small, stylish BMW.
The 2004 BMW MX9, the Bond car. Pierce Bronson himself drives one.
Yeah, that's because the car company gave him one for free. Duff gestured to the rear of the car.
Notice, there is virtually no room for luggage of any kind. The man who drives this car, he don't want no more baggage.
Interesting. I looked at June and she was already jotting notes. But the character we're buying for isn't that irrelevant. Duff had obviously heard every reason ever given not to like and therefore buy a car.
Well, this car gives you precision, craftsmanship, ergonomics, an onboard nav system. These features are not irrelevant, Bruce. They are timeless.
Duff, I can't blame you for trying. This car was cool for a couple of years, but it's very thin. Can we move on to something new and different? Duff steered us toward the cars closest to the main showroom, the high-end section.
The Lexus. XL5, top of the line. This car says CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
I hopped into the Lexus and had a look around. The interior was plush as hell, with heavenly seats and an instrument panel befitting a small airplane. Hey, you're right. I feel like a CEO. Duff continued his pitch from outside the car.
I've sold this car not only to CEOs, but to politicians, athletes, movie stars.
Yeah, but it's not quite right. See, my guy isn't a CEO and he's not an asshole.
Beg pardon?
June looked up from her notes. Well, when I see them on the road, they're driven by well-dressed, stern-looking guys and usually accompanied by some facelifted bottle blonde who looks miserable. This is also the kind of car you're going to most likely see parked illegally in a handicapped spot or sideways taking up three spaces. Close stuff, but no cigar.
Damn! This friend of yours is a picky sumbitch, ain't he? Because we sell these like hotcakes.
Duff led me across the lot to the muscle section and gestured to a silver behemoth.
Here you go, Bruce. No man can resist the temptation of a Dodge Ram 4x4 2500 XL GS30 twin cab.
Huge is a word that is overused, but I'm going to use it. The truck was huge.
This Dodge could fit that Baja in the back bed. It's got 345 horsepower with a Hemi Magnum V8 standard. By owning this car, you say to the world, get the hell out of my way!
By owning this car, you say to the world, I have a needle dick. June dug the tip of her number 2 pencil into her legal pad. Duff looked at me like he hadn't heard properly.
Come again?
Well, the guys who drive these gigantic trucks are all little Napoleon bastards. They can't get it up, so they put a monster under their gonads. I'd be afraid that women would think my friend was impotent if he drove that truck. I mean, in a few years, Duff, he's going to need a handicap ramp just to get into it. Duff invaded my personal 18-inch bubble to ask a question.
Bruce, does your friend suffer from erectile problems?
Actually, Duff, I have no idea. What kind of a question is that?
It's been clinically proven that the tire-to-frame vibrations from this truck stimulate blood flow to the extremities of the body, and I think you know what I'm talking about.
Duff cracked a Texas-wide smile and rocked on the heels of his boots.
Not to mention what it does for the little lady. Now, there's a reason why it's our number one seller.
I can think of a cheaper way to get a hard-on.
Oh, come on now. Don't make fun of me until you tried it. Get up in there. Take it for a spin around the parking lot and then tell me I'm crazy.
I thought about declining, but my Motor City sensibilities made me weak. Okay, Duff, sure, once around the parking lot. Duff grinned and winked at June, who turned away, mildly horrified. I climbed into the truck's elevated cab. Looking out, I could see the entire parking lot. Feeling like the king of my vehicular domain, I started the Dodge and revved the engine like a 16-year-old in a Walmart parking lot. Wow, that was smooth. I did it again. June stepped back a couple feet, cringing at the loud noise, and Duff, ever the gentleman, grabbed her by the elbow.
Do you know what I think when I see this car? I think strength. I think rugged reliability.
I gotta drive this monster. I shifted into D and let my foot off the brake. The powerful engine propelled the truck forward. I pressed the gas, but the truck didn't lurch like my ranch junker. It was smooth like a sports car. The tachometer bounced as I revved, braked, and turned my way around the parking lot. Didn't take long for a tingle to work its way across me. The entire truck was vibrating like a coin-operated mattress. I swung around in front of June and Duff, but I couldn't bring myself to stop. His BS about what the truck does for the male species wasn't BS at all. I had a hard-on that would impress my dad. I turned beet red from embarrassment, but I found myself laughing at the same time. Soon, I was laughing so hard I had to roll up my windows. The more I drove around the parking lot, the harder I laughed and the harder I got. It was an insane scenario that caused a near miss with a Lamborghini.
Hey, Duff, I'm driving a real truck.
I'll start the paperwork.
I put the truck in park and wiped the tears of joy from my eyes. Towering above a row of brand new Hummers in front of me, I felt like some sort of fuel-injected deity. Even the small red pickup truck speeding along next to them amused me. There is room for all vehicles, big and small, in my SUV kingdom. Then I noticed that two masked men in the bed of the pickup were dumping liquid on the Hummers as they passed each one. Holy eco-terrorist, something bad is about to...
God!
The entire row of Hummers became engulfed in 10-foot-high flame.
Lord almighty!
Duff screamed, losing his hat from the concussion. He grabbed his cell phone and dabbed out 911. June stumbled back and slammed into the side of a BMW. She dropped to the ground, notes scattering. The little red truck screeched out of the lot, down a residential side street. From my high vantage point, I could see exactly where the eco-terrorists were heading. Intent on cutting them off, I put the Dodge in gear and hit the gas. The red truck was quick. More important, it wasn't as wide as my all-terrain oil tanker and fit neatly down a narrow alley. There was no way to follow, but I could blaze my own trail across a nearby backyard. I slipped the Dodge into low gear and roared across the freshly sodded yard, narrowly avoiding a kiddie pool and an angry pit bull. I emerged about 10 lengths behind the red truck on a short straightaway and opened the monster up. The ensuing rush of speed was better than any truck commercial could possibly convey. Within seconds, I was poised to ram the destructive little fuckers off the road, but glancing down, I realized that I was also poised to embarrass myself. Enough with the vibrations already. Eco-warriors must prepare for various scenarios in case their destroy in order to save the world plan goes awry, and these guys were on their game. Bags of nails and glass bottles hailed down on the road behind their truck. Consequently, I was too busy avoiding punctured tires to notice the Molotov cocktail sailing through the air. But I did perk up when it shattered on my front hood and erupted into a wall of flames. I couldn't see through the inferno, but I knew I was reasonably close to their truck, so I opted for one last hurrah and jammed the gas pedal to the floor. The V8 propelled the Dodge forward, engaging the passing gear, and I hit something hard. The impact blew out the gasoline fire, revealing the crippled mass of the red truck spinning out of control. My truck had nailed it square in the back and sent it careening down a steep grass embankment directly toward oncoming traffic. I turned my attention toward my own vehicle, which was lurching irrevocably toward the same fate. The two front tires had blown from the collision, reducing navigation to a cruel joke. I jammed on the brakes as hard as I could, but from the lack of response, I knew right away that inertia was not to be overcome. With no other choice, I kicked open the door and jumped out as the truck reached the lip of the hill. I tried to hit the ground running, but I misjudged the rate of travel and my legs were swept out from under me. I connected with Mother Earth at an awkward angle, and momentum kept me tumbling on the hard scrabble for what seemed like 100 yards. Ahead of me, the Dodge rolled out of sight and the rest could only be heard. Terrified screams, the twisting metal, the report of a huge explosion. Things didn't sound good for the eco-terrorists. By the time I limped back to Midlife Motors, the gigantic fire was almost out. Duff and June had collected themselves and were giving interviews to the local police. The recent turn of events convinced me that I had found the right car.
June, pay the man. I'm going to drive the Dodge back to New York.
Word traveled fast about the Hummer incident, so by the time I rolled the truck up to the loading dock behind Mike's brownstone, the production office was ready with an impromptu celebration. I revved the beefy engine to the delight of the assembled cast and crew, which included Mike, June, taking notes now with a bandaged elbow, Richard, and even Renee. I jumped out of the truck, stood on the hood, and raised my arms in victory. Instead of applause, there was a slight gasp from the crowd. In all the activity, I had forgotten the side effects of a long road trip in that particular vehicle.
Well, at least you're happy to see us, Bruce.
Renee was staring unabashedly at my emboldened manliness. It was the first time she got my name right, and the last time she ever forgot it.